Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 495. Science Faction, the ancestor of everyone or the ancestor of no one.
Bold words, bold words. You are the Mrs. Doubtfire of the comedy science world, Bobby. That hello, it brings in the new week.
That is very true, in that the one time that a judge separated us, I pretended to be a British nanny to get back into your life just to mock you about lack of information on recently published science articles.
Oh, yeah, we knew it was you. We asked you to leave several times. Not until the dishes are done, you dumb yank.
You don't know shit about the periodic table, bitch.
I just want to sleep, man. It's 3 a.m.
Not in England.
Not Greenwich Mean.
Yeah, that's. I took it to that extreme. I only functioned on Greenwich Mean Time.
And you're super rude when we wake you during the day.
Do you have any idea what time it is in Manchester?
No, I don't. Just leave.
But can you move your fucking car? You're blocking me in.
Why is it impossible to evict somebody in this state? God damn it.
Oh, and speaking of evictions, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing wonderfully. I have no reason for that. I'm just alive.
Yeah.
And, hey, a certain world leader. I'm not a man of faith. I've never been a man of faith. But as I understand it, Herman Cain felt pretty good after he found out he had COVID for a few days, then quickly declined. I'm just saying, Herman Cain probably ate much better than President Trump and has a healthier lifestyle.
True.
Taking out all other genetic factors, I got a good shot. I think my team's going to the Super Bowl.
As those of you guys who listen to our Corona episode will know, Damien apparently doesn't listen to our own Corona episodes, or you would have heard why it's very unlikely that our president will pass from Corona.
Okay, fine. He already has trouble going down metal stairs. Is it too much to ask for some long-term organ damage? Something that weakens him and puts him in a degenerative health spiral?
And if you guys wanted to be weakened into your own degenerative health spiral, I am actually hosting our Digital Nerd Night tomorrow night. When you guys hear this, it might be tonight, depending on how you hear this. Again, same as always, just private message our Facebook group with the email you would like, and we will send you the link. I got to kind of do it that way, because apparently I can't give it out, because otherwise people will come and put their dicks all over Zoom. I don't know. I guess so. We live in a world where you can't just give an online entertaining science talk without somebody trying to wave their dick and yell Baba Booey. So unfortunately, this is where we are. And so my like...
Whoa, you guys are being ridiculous. First off, if science events were popping off to the extent that people thought like, wow, I could get like 1,000 eyes on this dick, Baba Booey, Baba Booey. That's a small price to pay for science finding its way into pop culture. We got to see some
finding
dogs.
Its way one dick at a time, yeah.
There, you know, just as there's an acceptable amount of rat fecal matter that can be in each and every Reese's peanut butter cup, there's a variance.
Right. Yes. It also depends what type of rat, because some rat poo tastes more like peanut butter. You're allowed to have more of that.
Yeah, the rats who feast primarily upon the peanut butter.
Which, ironically, would be the rats that would be in a Reese's peanut butter factory, right? Like, in a way, it's the circle of life, I think. I think that's how that works. Because circle of life goes from processed peanut paste into a rat through their anal cavity and then back into the processed peanut paste.
Hershey's actually considers that part of their trademarked formula.
Yeah, it's like when that weird little ferret thing eats the coffee beans and then digests it. And that's like a really expensive kind of coffee is the shat out version of that ferret coffee bean stuff.
Listen, don't ask how the Reese's are made. Just sit there and enjoy your delicious chocolate peanut butter feces treat.
I mean, one day I think the Reese's Corporation will actually just circumvent the middleman and genetically engineer Reese's paste producing mice, where the mice are just fed, and then they excrete that Reese's paste.
You just squeeze them.
Yeah.
It's like a fucking Star Trek.
No, I imagine it like one of those things chefs use to top cakes, you know, like when they're doing the cake the frosting.
And then you throw out the crushed mouse.
They use mouse, yes. Yes. That's good. Let's just go on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, This is Science Articles.
Oh, I love the beautiful fantasy world that we paint for our listeners, Damien.
Yes, it is. We make science fun, don't we?
We would have had a way funnier and harder to talk to your children version of Ratatouille. I will tell you that right now.
I would imagine, like, if you somehow could teach consumer capitalism to the Avatar species, like, that's basically the type of world they'd become. You know, they just would insert their head genitals into a horse and use it for whatever peanut butter purposes.
So much to unpack in that. I'm not even going to touch it. Right. Article number one, a really cool opinion piece in Scientific American about how closely we are all related. Now, this is really interesting. Again, this is an opinion piece. There's not really a whole bunch of published this week's science in it. It's more of just a compilation of somebody's thoughts about existing science. And let me tell you, as somebody who is decently well-versed on existing science, this was super interesting even to me. The point of this article was to look at exactly how related we all are and about how bad our instincts are about that. And the title of the article is Humans Are More Closely Related Than We Commonly Think. You can find it for free, not behind a paywall, on the Scientific American site right now. But let's start this out. Damien, if I had to say, how closely do you think we are all related? How would you first start by responding?
I would start by responding that I have been on this show for many years, and because this subject is not archaeology, I find it really interesting. And so I've listened to a lot of what you have to say on this. I know that the two most divergent populations genetically from each other are native North Africans and native South Africans.
Well, it's native South Africans from everybody else is the way it is.
Oh, okay. So Oscar Pistorius.
Yes, that's right. That's why he has the blade legs. Has so little human DNA.
I would love to see the selection pressures that led to blade legs.
Oh, his dad fucked a canoe. They're paddles. He's an aquatic species, mainly.
I'm just glad he married the canoe. Okay.
I'm not glad for the canoe, I'll tell you that. It's danger, if you ask me.
You've never been to Johannesburg, I take it.
Sorry, how closely related are we, David?
How many South African fans do we have, by the way? I want to know before we really tear.
I can look. We do have a certain amount of South African downloads every time, because every once in a while I look at the map of downloads and I'm like, how do we have a download? How do we have four downloads in Zaire?
You know what? We have a ton of listeners in Australia and New Zealand, and we shit on them all the time. Italy too. So you know what? South Africa, going forward, targets on your chest. Are you asking in reference of are we third cousins? How many generations removed are we? What percentage?
Yeah. So you can answer this how you like, but I'll give you a little bit of direction. How long do you have to go back before you think everybody has a common relative? So that everybody walking around alive today is all related to one person. How far back in time would we have to go till we found that one person? The most recent one.
I'm going to say 400,000 years.
Okay, well, that's a dumb answer.
Okay, that's fair.
But... because we already know, right? Because we've talked before about out of Africa, about how all the lineages that we believe to currently exist now basically stem from a group of Homo sapiens that came out of Africa about 75 some odd thousand years ago, plus the second much more prominent wave that came out about 55,000 years ago, and then everybody who stayed in Africa, basically. So from that point, you could be like, maybe it was that long ago. And from that point, we already know, we've talked before about mitochondrial Eve, which is about 100,000 years ago or so. She is the most recent common ancestor on that maternal line, meaning goes all the way up maternally to her. She's the mother's 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 mother of everybody on Earth. The Y chromosome, Adam, is more recent, 60 to 90,000 years ago, likely because males can displace a population more readily. So the last father's father's father of everybody goes all the way back there. But those are very specific lineages. So we're just tracking the Y chromosome and mitochondrial DNA. So that has to be the last mom's 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 mom, or the last dad's 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 dad. The problem with that is, you have so many relatives as you get further and further back. You're only talking about one of your, at some point, many, many relatives. To put this in perspective, and this is covered in the article, if you go back 1,000 years, about 33 generations, you have about 8 billion ancestors. Now, there's not 8 billion people on Earth today, and there certainly wasn't 8 billion people on Earth 1,000 years ago, so how does that work? Well, it works because those aren't all individual different people, right? Your great-great-great-great-great-grandmother was also your great-great-great-aunt or something like that. All of those converge because those people re-got together and lineages didn't just stay separated. They got together and intermixed and everything like that. So Again, if you go back 1,000 years, you have 8 billion ancestors. But if you're only looking at Y chromosomes, you're only saying one of those 8 billion. So it's much harder to get all of those to diverge for everybody. So the last mitochondrial last common ancestor, 100,000 years ago, last Y chromosome one, 60 to 90,000 years ago. But the most recent common ancestor of all people on Earth is somewhere between 1500 BC and 50 AD.
50 AD.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow, so it could have been Jesus.
Well, I don't think he had kids, so no.
Oh, real. But I mean,
yeah,
there are a couple holes in this story. I'll give you that.
So you might ask, how is that possible? There are people that have been separated for longer than that. Yes, certainly the people who came to the Americas were separated for longer than that. So the reason this is even though you have groups like Native American groups that have been separated for obviously much longer than, you know, 1500 BC, you know, you're talking about isolated from since, you know, 30 some odd thousand years ago. The thing is, since contact, there has been so much interbreeding that there really aren't people that don't share both lineages. And what's interesting is, again, if you go back a certain amount of time, you essentially share the lineage with everybody. So you talk about 1,500 years ago to 50 AD. That's where we think, genetically, the most recent last common ancestor of everybody on Earth is. Meaning, everybody can trace themselves back to that one person. However, there's something a little different.
It's actually his evil twin.
His evil twin?
Yeah, it's not actually your ancestor. It's his evil twin, who never had kids, but same genes. But
exact same DNA.
But you are not technically of his lineage. He, of course, has evil semen, which would have made an entirely different evil timeline of family.
So somewhere between 1500 BC to 50 AD lived a person who was the last common ancestor to every living person on Earth. However, they obviously, everybody had many, many more ancestors. If you go back a bit further than that, you get to a certain point where, and this is going to sound super trippy. This is one of those science things that are true. Trust me, I will walk you through it, but it's going to sound trippy as fuck at first. You get to a point called the ISO point. Now, the ISO point is a point where, because of all of that intermixing, everybody's great-grandfather is everybody's great-great-great-grandfather is everybody's everything else, and they all mix together. After the certain ISO point of any population, any person who exists at that time, so let's say the ISO point is 100,000 years ago, any individual person who exists at that time is either the ancestor of nobody on Earth, meaning all their descendants died out, maybe they didn't even have descendants, they didn't have any kids, or their lineages died out, so they're either the ancestors of nobody, or they're the ancestors of everybody. How crazy is this idea? Because everything is so mixed up, if you go back far enough, any one individual you pick out of the human population is the direct ancestor of every human alive today.
Even me?
Even you, Damien.
Then you need to show me some more fucking respect on this show. Mister, well, I'm taking off my belt right now. No, you don't interrupt me, mister.
So, Damien, where do you think this ISO point is for human beings, where once you get there, any person you find is either the ancestor of nobody alive today or the ancestor of every human on Earth alive today?
$1.
That is not a time frame at all.
I just need to beat the person who's going to bid after me. Listen, they can go. I'll let them go over. I'll let them overshoot.
Well, the estimates range from anywhere from 15,000 to 5,000 years to, this article quotes, 5,300 to 2,200 BC. So 4,000 to 7,000 years. So even at the high range of 15,000 years estimate, so let's say it's somewhere between 4,000 to 15,000 years ago.
Any person I find is my relative. Yeah. And so I cannot off. I cannot kill.
Or the relative of nobody.
So I'd like to see this in time travel movies. Like, you can, there are certain people who have just aged past being able to kill without destroying humanity.
Yes. Well, so it is a really interesting thing. Now, I do think there would be some quirks to this, and I'm very interested to see how they all play out. For instance, you could make the argument that everybody alive at, let's say, 5,000 BC in the Americas, so any person alive, probably then their lineage went through the Americas, and then certainly by contact, most of the people in the Americas would have been a direct descendant of that person. But I don't know that everybody from Europe or Central Asia or the middle of Africa has an ancestor that then came back from that lineage. I don't know that there was breed back into the general population. So I do think there are some weird hiccups to this, and I'd be interested to see how they all work out. But it is a really interesting idea of an iso point, of this point where if you go back in time far enough, then whoever is there is basically the ancestor to everybody. And essentially, we're all related. Once you go back to that point, everybody's ancestors are exactly the same, which is a really interesting concept. I like the idea because it shows how related we are. If that's only a few thousand years. I mean, it shoots in the foot a lot of like the regionalist, ethnocentric, racist, but also just like weird cultural things of these people are different from these people. Because in reality, when you mix up like we have, the way the genetics work, you essentially get this mixed population where everybody is related to everybody else. And in cases of smaller populations, those groups are even smaller. So in Europe, if you're just talking about anybody with European descent, that number, that iso point, goes to 1,000 years. So one of the things they brought up is a guy put out a book about how he found out he was the direct descendant of Charlemagne. Well, Charlemagne was around in the 10th century, meaning every human being from European descent is a direct descendant of Charlemagne.
They just don't brag about it.
Yeah, right? Like, Damien, how often do we sit around and just be like, hey, fucking, you know what's awesome? Being the sons of Charlemagne.
High five.
Yeah, oh, fuck, I just feel like I just gave a name to a white supremacist group somewhere.
And we look at the caveman who was frozen in time for the last 10,000 years. Yeah. Sorry, what's it like to not be related to Charlemagne? Ugh.
So, really, really interesting, one of those weird genetic, like, flukes that kind of go through a population. Now, if populations were evenly distributed, this would be much better and easier to model, but obviously we have geographical barriers, we have oceans and mountains, and people get into weird spots, and then all of a sudden we don't see them for tens of thousands of years, so stuff like that happens, and that puts the wrench in it. But in general, this all follows pretty basic mathematical modeling, and it's really interesting to see, you know, you go back, again, 1,000 years. It's not that far in terms of human history. And yet you have 8 billion great-great-great-whatever grandparents at that point. And that's way more than the population there. So obviously, everybody has to be super closely related. We talked about how like blue eyes appeared once in one person like 5,000 years ago. And everybody you know who has blue eyes, and by the way, a lot of people you know who have brown eyes who are recessive for blue, all are the direct descendants of that
one. We don't count them, one of us. Don't, no, yeah. They are... They're wolves in sheep's clothing, and you don't trust a brown. In fact, every time you see a brown-eyed person,
they're daywalkers. It's only if they're heterozygous, though. If they're just homozygous for the brown allele, that's fine. They're their own kind. They can stick to themselves. It's those undercover brown-eyed people, they show brown eyes, but they have one recessive gene for blue eyes. Those are the ones you can't trust.
Yeah, you know, at the end of days, when brown-eyed people are toppling the cities of the blue-eyed and the green-eyed, they'll stand side by side and fight as one, resolving their differences too late.
Just constantly playing that god-awful brown-eyed girl song over and over again.
You suck, Van Morrison.
Very, very interesting. I love these stories that kind of highlight the weird quirks of people. It's kind of like when you find out statistically you only need, like, if you have 21 people in a room, statistically two of them will share a birthday type thing. It's like, well, that number doesn't seem like it's where it should be, but it totally is.
Yeah, that's one, like, there's certain ways that math, now keep in mind, I have a child's understanding of math, but there are certain things that make me feel even less, and that's one.
Yeah. Or I just heard one recently that totally threw me for a loop. And I'm like a stats nerd, like a Monty Hall dilemma. I get it. Like, I understand why that works. And I think it's one of the most interesting things in math and all that kind of stuff. I found another one the other day I hadn't even realized. And so here's a good one. All right, Damien, if I tell you I have two children, what are the chances the youngest one is a boy?
That the youngest one is a boy? Mm-hmm. My offhanded guess is going to be 50-50.
Correct. If I tell you I have two children and the older one is a boy, what are the chances the younger one is a boy?
Good old 50-50. Nothing beats 50-50.
Yep, that time is correct.
So you stick to your guns, everybody. Never change. Never, ever change.
If I tell you I have two kids and one of them's a girl,
what is the likelihood that the other child is also a girl?
50-50.
No, it's 1/3.
What?
Isn't that weird?
Okay. It's like one of those things like, no, I'm sorry, sir, you've taken, like, when you take one of the blue balls out of the lottery, and now you're the likelihood of getting a pink ball, like in the testicle lottery, is just that much higher.
Yes, it's all about testicle lotteries. No, okay.
That I win every night.
you might be going, wait a second, isn't the only difference you said brother instead of sister or boy instead of girl in the other one?
Well, the mom was the doctor.
Yes. No, the answer was, I said, the older one is a boy. What are the chances of the younger one? When I said one is a girl, I didn't say older or younger. How could that possibly change the output? Because here are the possibilities if you have two kids. Older boy and younger boy. Older girl and younger girl. Older girl, younger boy. Older boy, younger girl. Once you take out, when you say the older one is a boy,
that is a 50-50 situation because the options are older boy, younger boy, and older boy, younger girl. There's only two options. Half are boy, half are girl, so it's 50-50. But in the other scenario in which I said just one of the siblings is a girl, I didn't specify older or younger, then the options are older girl, younger girl, older girl, younger boy, older boy, younger girl. In other words, there are three options, and only one of those has the unknown child's gender as female. Now, I switched female and male just so I could talk about these more easily, talk about those situations differently. I talked about one being two brothers and one being two sisters. But obviously, it doesn't matter. You can switch brother or sister for this, and it's the same as long as it's the same gender. Basically, you're saying, what are the chances it's the same gender? Because out of those three possible options, only one of them has the second child being the same gender, then the chances are actually 1 in 3 that the unknown child's gender would be the same as, you know, the known ones. Now, should be stated real quickly a few problems with this. Obviously, there's issues with non-binary genders, and I'm not just talking about, you know, what we think of culturally as non-binary genders, but there's a whole range of hermaphrodism and XXY and androgen insensitivity, and there's all that kind of stuff as well. There's also unequal gender birth rates. We tend to see a higher birth rate of male babies. We think that's because males tend to kill themselves off more, so it balances out to 50-50 by the time you enter into mating. And as we recently discovered, I think only a year or two ago and covered on this show, it turns out that the chances of having a boy or a girl are not 50-50 and they're not independent variables because men, or at least some men, we're not quite sure if this is all men or just some very small subset or something, but certainly there are men who tend to have either boys or girls, and that can actually travel down the family lineage where you will have a man will tend to have either boys or girls, and it has to do with selective production of sperm or selective surviving of sperm or something like that. But regardless to say, we have now decided it is A, not 50-50, and B, not random chance. They're not necessarily independent variables. If you know one, you depending on the man, you have a better chance of knowing the next, et cetera, et cetera. But we are doing 50-50, so just if it really bothers you when I was talking about gender, just switch it to coin flipping because it's the exact same idea. But it's an interesting question because it's not like the order of the coin flipping is affecting it. Again, in this scenario, though we know this is not necessarily the case now with births, they are mutually exclusive events. You know, one has no effect on the other. So if you are a family and you have a girl, the chances that your next child will be a girl, again, assuming the 50-50 and everything, are still 50-50. It doesn't change. It doesn't mean that that chance is 1/3. Essentially, what this is saying is looking at it from a population standpoint. If you were to look at everybody who in a family of two children, one of them was a girl, and then try and see how many of those families the other one was a girl, it would be 1/3. Because, again, there would be one chance that it would be girl-girl, and then two chances that it would either be boy-girl or girl-boy. So it is a little bit counterintuitive. This is a really, really weird one, kind of like Monty Hall, that really kind of puts your brain for a loop in terms of what you understand about statistics and how the world works. And you have to not see it as like an individual likelihood of the next event happening, but rather it's like a population statistics thing, but still really, really, really cool. And so there are some really weird stuff in like math and science where it does not seem that things are following the rules of logic. But once you break it down, you just realize the logic is very complex.
I want to see this replicated in delivery rooms in hospitals across America. I want to see. Collect data.
I've already talked about it on this show before, so I won't bring it up again. But if you guys want another really interesting stats thing that will make you like wrinkle your eyebrow and then think about it quite a bit, look up the Monty Hall problem. And that's one of my all-time favorite stats things.
Is that like the full Monty?
Well, I mean, just the balls.
Okay. What I'm doing on Zoom right now. Here, let's take a look.
Yeah, it's pulled through the zipper and tastefully displayed, as the British tend to do.
Hey, while I got your eyes there, is this a wart?
That looks like a Skittle.
Let me get that. There you go. Well, you're not going anywhere. It's a red one. I know they all taste the same, but I like the red ones more.
That's They don't taste the same now.
Can we put in some Foley crunching right there?
Yeah, there's no rainbow anybody wants to taste. All right. We're not going to spend too much time on the second story since we already spent a lot of time on the first one, but I do want to just point out, because I do like when interesting and kind of positive science news gets reported. So article number
Andrew
two.
Andrew Wakefield died.
When Hep C gets you the honeys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's when I go into a club, first thing I do is I let the Magnum condom slyly fall from my wallet.
Yes.
And then I pay for a beer using a $100 bill, and then I drop, excuse me, is there a discount for people with hepatitis C?
Just bring them running.
Whap, whap.
This actually refers to the Nobel Prize for Medicine that was awarded this week for the discovery of hepatitis C. So,
the coolest scientist around.
Well, yeah. So what I'm getting at here is the fact that these guys, you know, painstakingly discovered hepatitis C, you know, now as more senior statesmen of science, they've worked their entire career. They worked really hard. They did a lot of work in the lab. And now all the poon is coming retroactively. When chicks hear Nobel Prize, that's like when an NBA star fucker hears that dude is going to be the starting forward on the Lakers.
You joke, but if a Nobel laureate tours a college campus, all the adjunct professors are throwing themselves.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only reason to go on a college tour after you, it's a victory lap after you've gotten your Nobel Prize.
Yeah, you go around, you do a lot of those things where you end up in some co-ed's dorm room wearing only the Nobel Prize.
Sometimes a Nobel Peace Prize member will try to get some of the runoff, D and or P.
Yeah, no, that guy gets kicked out. It's like the guys who win like the prize for literature or something. No, you know, they're not real. They don't count.
Just shut down Balala, that Pakistani girl who was shot in the head. Wow.
So hepatitis, that just refers to an inflammation or damage of the liver, right? That can be caused by drinking. It can be caused by physical damage. It can be caused by viruses and diseases. It can be caused by a lot of stuff. One of them is a virus called hepatitis C. Now, we had already discovered hep A and B, I believe. We had already discovered that at that point, but we had not figured out hep C, which is a much bigger problem than hep A. And the fact that it's an STD means it gets passed around a lot. And, you know, the way STDs work is they tend... It's a weird way to think about it, but if you ever think about, like, who is traveling... Those are the people that are going to spread STDs, right? Like, one of the ironies are that STDs spread faster than, like, another kind of contact virus because the type of person who has a bunch of STDs is also the person who just wants to bang a whole lot of random other people.
They like connecting with people, man. Like, yeah, they shared hepatitis, but you talk about the love?
Yes. Hepatitis L?
Yeah, I got tons of that.
Super interesting because it is now, it was for a while, like quite a bad life sentence if you got diagnosed with hepatitis C. I mean, it was fatal in many cases.
I sentence
it was...
you to hepatitis C for life.
That's the worst judge ever.
Yeah, just this really handsy prison guard comes over to you. Oh yeah, I'll give it to him. I'll make sure he gets all kinds of hepatitis smalls.
No, that would be like in the South. No, like here, they would just have, like, they'd have a guy with a lab coat, and he'd have like a little, he'd have one of those pipettes, and it'd be filled with something that he just like shot into your penis.
Yeah. Oh, that's actually just a burning agent. We put the, we put the hepatitis in later.
It has nothing to do with this, actually.
This is just a funny thing we do after we read you the sentence.
That reminds me, Damien, you remember... Remember when I told you I had to go to the ER and I was having horrible urethral pains and they were because I couldn't pee and they were going to have to put a catheter in and the woman told me it wasn't going to hurt a lot. And then she's like, are you ready? And I said, okay. I mean, you said it wasn't going to hurt. And all of a sudden I felt something very abrasive on the tip of my penis. And I was like, okay. Whoa, that was, I appreciate that you say it doesn't hurt. But like, that's not quite accurate. Maybe you should go, it's not as uncomfortable as you might think. You'll get through it or something like that. But I don't think it doesn't hurt is the right word for it because that wasn't quite comfortable. And then she looked at me with a straight face and went, that was the first of three antiseptic sponges before we put in the catheter.
And tears just started flowing down your face right then.
No, those came later when they tried to put in the catheter.
That's not the speech you got to be given, nurse. You have to basically tell them, you have to be giving them the speech of like a field sergeant in Vietnam. Listen, your legs are blown out. And you're not going to make it. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, that's
but if you want to live, Dark Hero is going to have to cut through some of the skin to get you out of this helicopter. Do you understand? I need you to be strong, soldier.
I will say that actually might have helped because a little bit later with that same problem, almost the exact same problem, my bladder was about to burst. And this time I went into a urology department and it happened to be with a nurse who I had had earlier in a very good urology visit who was very sweet to me and we had joked and laughed around a lot and she was very honest with me. And they were laying me down and they were about to tell me how they were going to cut me open without anesthesia. And I better get ready for a really interesting surgery. And I was holding her hand and I was like, hey, Rhonda, is this going to hurt? And she looked at me and she went, honey, there will be better days. It's like, well, at least you're honest.
Respect. It's a good quote. Yeah. I'm a movie writer. I'm going to steal that.
Yeah, well, do it. That was a moment I will not soon forget. All right.
Yes, there will.
Thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 495, where you learned all about how we're all very closely related and how Hep C can get you the honeys. Thank you so much for joining, and come on back later this week for Science Faction 496.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.